First case this morning is case number 69649, in re the estate of Chabineau. Is that how you pronounce that?
We pronounce it Chabineau, Your Honor.
Okay, and we're ready to proceed with Ms. St. Clair Doyle and Mr. Stern.
Your Honors, and may it please the Court, I'm Carrie Doyle, and I represent the estate of Michael Chabineau and the personal administrator, Paul Chabineau. If it pleases the Court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Okay.
In this case, NationStar is barred from non-judicial foreclosure because its predecessor in interest filed a claim in probate for the entire amount of the note, filed a complaint in district court for the entire amount of the note, and dismissed that complaint with prejudice. There are two rationales the court can use to reach that conclusion. The first is limited to the unique factual circumstances of this case, in which foreclosure is barred because the lender dismissed that complaint for the entire amount of the note with prejudice.
Was that for the deficiency?
Justice Perry, they've argued now that it was for a deficiency.
Correct.
However, a deficiency still doesn't exist. No foreclosure has happened. The claim and the complaint were both for the full amount of the note.
So deficiency wasn't mentioned in the complaint?
Correct, Your Honor. Deficiency was only mentioned when they later voluntarily dismissed it with prejudice.
How did it come to be dismissed with prejudice?
I don't honestly know, Justice Pickering. They chose to voluntarily dismiss with prejudice.
So that wasn't something that was inflicted on them by you or the district court? It was a voluntary, the with prejudice piece was...
At no point was there a motion to dismiss, whether based on sanctions or otherwise. The motion was to voluntarily dismiss under 41A, and they chose to dismiss it with prejudice.
And has there been any effort to modify that or to go in and...
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Ms. Doyle, it is the case, is it not, that your client, or at least the estate and the decedent, was current on the note at the time the claim was filed, and in fact had made payments in advance?
Your Honor, it is our position that he was current at the time he died, Mr. Chabineau, and that he had made about $50,000 in advance payments on the note. That matter, factually, has never been adjudicated. And it hasn't been because Bank of America chose to dismiss the complaint with prejudice. So we still don't know what the correct amount of the outstanding debt is, and there's no place to adjudicate that now. As the court's aware, it's outside the scope of foreclosure mediation, and they have foreclosed any opportunity to dispute the amount due.
Mr. I have one other question. Interesting case, you know, it's an unusual set of issues here. On the one action rule, yeah, and we have some old case on this, but is your position that the one action rule has to be waived by the borrower or by the lender? Whose option is it to waive that from your point of view?
In general, Your Honor, it is the borrower's right. The one action rule protects the borrower.
Right.
So the one action rule can be waived by the borrower. However, the application of the one action rule in this case, it serves to allow the complaint to go forward on a probate claim. If you didn't have the exception to the one action rule for complaints made on probate claims, that original complaint, which is for the entire amount of the note, could be dismissed because it's being filed for foreclosure.
Did your client waive the one action rule in this case?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that there's a waiver of the one action rule, and I don't think that there was a waiver required.
Was it pled as an affirmative defense, or did it ever get asserted by anybody at some point in time?
NationStar has asserted the one action rule at this point as some explanation for why it's allowed to separate a claim for a monetary debt and the security, I have to be completely honest with you, Your Honor. I don't understand that position. The one action rule doesn't say you can do this. It says there's an exception for a complaint filed on a probate claim that allows that complaint to go forward even though foreclosure hasn't happened yet.
Thank you.
Really, the one action rule is sort of extraneous to your position. I mean, they sued on the note. They dismissed with prejudice. They admitted they had no claim on the note. Ergo, you and your money and your property.
Well, Your Honor, they sued.
I mean, is that your position?
It is. They have waived any claim under the note, and under this court's case law, under Edelstein, you have to have a right to recover under a note before you can enter foreclosure on a deed of trust. A deed of trust, it's only a tool. It's a tool that serves to secure repayment of a debt. If the debt no longer exists because they have filed a complaint and dismissed that complaint with prejudice, then the deed of trust is a tool with no purpose.
But isn't the only way to release a deed of trust through a deed of reconveyance signed by the trustee to the deed of trust pursuant to a request filed by the beneficiary? How else do you get a deed of trust off your property?
Well, I believe you can file a petition to quiet title, which is what we did in this case.
Okay.
And certainly if there's an invalid deed of trust or a deed of trust that is no longer valid and should be reconveyed, if the lender refuses to reconvey it, the only way to do that would be to bring a legal action, Your Honor.
Right. Thank you.
As I said, I think that that argument and those questions go really to the unique factual circumstances of this case. The court doesn't have to get in depth in the probate code to reach that conclusion. They can simply say, the note here has been eradicated. They've waived all claims under the note. NationStar has even conceded that they've waived claims for monetary damages under the note. And because of that, the deed of trust can no longer be enforced. However, there is a second rationale here, which would allow the court to address the probate code and the proper procedure to be taken by a mortgage holder in filing a claim in probate. Your Honors, our position is that a lender under 147-150 has two choices. It can submit a claim to probate, pursuing both the security and other assets of an estate, and therefore recover the full amount of its debt. Or it can waive recourse to the other assets of the estate and pursue foreclosure on the security alone. This process and the protection in NRS 147-150 allows a lender to choose the simplicity of a nonjudicial foreclosure, but only if they don't complicate probate by making a claim while at the same time taking what is likely the largest asset out of probate. This rule is supported by the statutory definitions of probate, estate, and claim as laid out in the brief. The central definition, I believe, here is the definition of claim, and that is a claim is a liability of the decedent, whether arising in contract, in tort, or otherwise. There isn't a lot that doesn't fit within that definition. When you add or otherwise, it means any liability, however it's arisen. Furthermore, this court has defined the scope of probate very broadly as an in rem proceeding in which the probate court, acquires jurisdiction over the estate and all persons for the purpose of determining their rights to any portion of the estate. Therefore, the statutes and case law that require a probate court to pay out and distribute the assets of a decedent to the persons entitled to them by settling claims that arise in contract, in tort, or otherwise means that the probate court acquires jurisdiction over all of a decedent's property and is able to resolve all claims for personal liability against that property. NationStar has made an argument that a a home, a property that is subject to a deed of trust is not property of the estate. I don't think that any homeowner in this room whose house is subject to a mortgage doesn't believe that their home is their property. Certainly it's subject to a lien, but the right of possessory interest, the property interest in any equity, all of that is the property of the estate and can't be excluded as the as the property was in, thank you, I see my time. Property held subject to a deed of trust is not property held subject to a trust agreement, as in some of the court's older cases, where that property did not become a part of the estate. In conclusion, the court should reverse the district court's order and hold that because the lender in this action filed a claim in probate for the entire amount of the note, filed a complaint again for the entire amount of the note, and dismissed that complaint with prejudice, NationStar is barred from nonjudicial foreclosure. Unless the court has further questions, I'll reserve.
Any further questions? Thank you. You have about 4 minutes and 10 seconds left for rebuttal. Stern.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ariel Stern on behalf of NationStar Mortgage. We believe that the district court was correct in denying the petition to quiet title. The district court dealt with and rejected what is a very novel theory presented by the estate, which is that despite express provisions, both in the one action rule, as well as in the way in which the complaint and the motion to dismiss the complaint was presented, the entirety of the debt is extinguished. The record doesn't support that, and the law does not support that. I believe the district court's order rested on two principal predicates. The first one, and I believe the district court correctly reached this conclusion based on the motion that was presented to it, was that the complaint was a complaint for a deficiency judgment. It was not a complaint for the entirety of the amount.
But that's not what it says. It says, in the addendum clause, plaintiff is entitled to immediate payment and defendant shall pay plaintiff, principal in the amount of $556,000 in all accrued interest pursuant to the promissory note evidencing the loan. That's the first paragraph of the addendum in the complaint. And the complaint has a breach of contract claim. I understand the difficulty here of a secured party needing to file a proof of claim in probate, et cetera, but it's hard to understand how, if you dismiss that with prejudice, that's an adjudication that those claims asserted in that complaint have been adjudicated adversely to the plaintiff.
I believe, Justice Pickering, there's a two-step response to that problem. The first, and I acknowledge the complaint reads broadly, as many...
It reads incredibly broadly.
We acknowledge that. There's no tap-dancing around that. However, that's not the end of the story. The complaint is dismissed pursuant to Bank of America's motion. And Bank of America's motion explains not only why it's being dismissed, but it explains what claims are being dismissed. So Bank of America's motion to dismiss the complaint explains that there's been no foreclosure. And because there's been no foreclosure, there's ongoing uncertainty on the amount of the deficiency of any. The motion further explains that the bank has determined as a business judgment of sorts that the estate is unlikely to have any proceeds to satisfy any deficiency. And so,
Dismiss it with prejudice? Why not dismiss it without?
I can't speak for why it was dismissed with prejudice, Your Honor. It was dismissed with prejudice, I think because and this is just based on what's in the record, because the bank made a determination that there was going to be no ability on the part of the estate to satisfy a deficiency judgment, and that was not likely to change. That's not fully set forth in the record, but...
No, it's not.
But the motion does say that, as a conclusory matter, they've determined that it's unlikely that there's going to be funds for the deficiency.
Mr. Stern, I'm sorry, I wanted to interrupt if I could while we're on this point. Is there anything in the record that shows that, in fact, the decedent was in default?
Your Honor, the...
And I'm talking about the record. What's been alleged?
I understand what's been alleged, Justice Hardesty. I believe the record did not make it far enough to adjudicate that issue. I think we're in agreement with the estate here that that's an issue that has not been judicially determined. Our position on that is that paragraph 5 of the note, which is the source of this argument, doesn't say what the estate says. There was a prepayment alleged, and under the note, that prepayment would have been reduced, would have reduced the principal, but it would not have changed the monthly payments that would have been due on a month-to-month basis. So while the principal amount owed on the note would have decreased, it nevertheless would have continued, the monthly service payments would have continued to be the same, and missing one payment would have caused a default.
But that wasn't set forth in your claim. The claim that was made shortly after the decedent's death and after the opening of the estate doesn't assert any of that. You assert the recovery of the entire note in the claim.
That's correct, Justice Hardesty. I believe once, two things on that. One is I would ask the court to remember that this is a notice pleading and the complaint does not set forth every fact and every possible theory of liability. It's drafted, I believe, as a notice complaint. Secondly, there is
I'm sorry, excuse me if I wasn't clear. I'm talking about the claim filed in the probate.
I understand that, Justice Hardesty. And I think the second part of this is that there is a right to acceleration. And once there's a default, the bank has the right under the deed of trust as well as under the note to accelerate and call the entirety of the amount due. And I believe that's what they were doing.
But there was no notice of default at the time the claim was filed either.
There was not, although I would suggest, I would argue that a notice of default is not necessary to accelerate. There may be other ways to accelerate.
But looking at the record, I don't want to speculate. Mm-hmm. Looking at the record, on the date that the decedent dies and the claim is filed, there's no notice of default, and there's nothing in the record that shows that the bank is contending that there is a default, is there?
There is the claim itself. The claim does not get into the details as to why the $50,000 was credited to the principal rather than as a reduction of the monthly payment, but it does say that there was, right after the decedent's death, a missed payment.
So the status of the record, this record, is decedent dies, bank files a claim for the full amount of the note, and the personal representative rejects that claim, and the bank sues, and then it gets dismissed with prejudice. Is that the record?
That's part of the record, Justice Hardesty. I believe if we get into the details of the record, the claim and the subsequent complaint both set forth the bank's position regarding acceleration. There is a default. The default occurs the month after the death. And that default triggers the acceleration. That's, we believe, sufficiently set forth both in the claim and the subsequent complaint. The record then shows that after the lapse of a period of time, the bank made a business determination that a deficiency was unlikely to be satisfied from proceeds from the estate. And so for that reason, it moves to dismiss the claim, the complaint. And in moving to dismiss the complaint, the bank explains and provides additional detail that wasn't in the complaint. And this goes as well to Justice Pickering's concern. In the motion, the bank does explain why it filed the complaint and what claims it is dismissing. And we believe that's a critical part of the record as well. And Justice Hardesty, to finish the thought on the deficiency, on the initial default, I'm in agreement with the estate that no court determined that with finality. What we do have as part of this record is that the claim was rejected, motion was made, excuse me, a complaint was filed, motion was made to dismiss. That takes care, in our view, of the deficiency issue, and as we stand before the court today, we have no intention, and we agree that we have waived any right to deficiency. The question before the court right now, I believe, is not whether there was a deficiency or not at that point. I think that horse has left the barn a little bit.
Why doesn't your note get extinguished under Steen, as Ms. Doyle comments?
And I agree, Justice Hartstein, that is the issue. And the reason for that is because the complaint, while it was stated at some level of generality as a breach of contract complaint, the dismissal of that complaint is really what governs it. It is what was dismissed in that complaint. This complaint, first of all, does not request any foreclosure. It simply says it's for the contract. In moving to dismiss the complaint, the bank explains that this is intended as a placeholder, as a deficiency action. And I think this gets to the practical difficulty that Justice Pickering alluded to, which is we have a 60-day limitation period under Chapter 147. We have, in addition to that, a one-action rule that directs us to go against the property first before seeking personal liability. And at the beginning of this process, there's uncertainty as to how much of any deficiency there's going to be and whether the estate or any debtor, for that matter, will have the ability to satisfy.
I assume the bank's position, probably like most lenders, is that out of an abundance of caution in an estate proceeding, you would file a claim simply because of the language in the probate code.
I think that's correct.
But if you have, against a homeowner who has passed away, if you had such a situation, though, and the homeowner is in default, wouldn't you also file the notice of foreclosure? The notice of default, excuse me?
I think so, Justice Hardesty. I believe there is...
nothing in the 60 days that limits your ability to do that.
Nothing does. I agree with that, Justice Hardesty, but there are two points here. One is this particular loan was also tied up in a state litigation that challenged the note and challenged the deed of trust, alleging, among other things, irregularities in the MERS system, fraud on the note, and all of these mm-hmm. things. That action was removed to federal court. It was eventually dismissed because there wasn't sufficient proof given to the federal court of the probate process. That, in this case, would have been a reason why the bank may have put the brakes on. There are many reasons why the banks may put the brakes on foreclosure. Loss mitigation. In today's world, a pre-foreclosure homeowner bill of rights. There's many things at play there. I think that the key point is the fact that the bank didn't pursue non-judicial foreclosure concurrently doesn't mean that it waived the right to do so at the appropriate time. I think the statute, if I recall correctly, under Chapter 106-240, gives the bank 10 years after the debt's maturity date on the deed of trust.
And so, I want to return for a moment, though, to the dismissal with prejudice. You would agree if, on that complaint, a simple order of dismissal with prejudice had been entered, for example, because Bank of America had engaged in terrible discovery misconduct and therefore its claims were being dismissed with prejudice. If we had an order that said these claims are dismissed with prejudice, normally that would conclude any kind of action to enforce that note, correct?
Absolutely, an appeal, yes, Justice Pickering, I do agree with that.
So the problem I'm struggling with, and the law in the briefs doesn't answer it for me, is why would we not treat an unconditional order of dismissal with prejudice as extinguishing the obligation represented by the note? And once that's extinguished, I mean, it's odd, it's bizarre, it shouldn't have happened. But once it's extinguished, if it's extinguished, then you can't foreclose because there's nothing to foreclose.
My response to that, Justice Pickering, is that the order is not unambiguous or unconditional. In fact, to the contrary, and I'd like to read from the record. This is on page JA-70.
The bank page what?
Motion, JA, page 70. The bank in its motion, starting around page 18.
That's the motion, not the order.
That is the motion, right. The bank states, it filed the instant action pursuant to NRS 147.130 to preserve its right to seek payment out of the general assets of the estate. Therefore, if a deficiency results from the foreclosure sale, BACHLS has the right to pursue.
But by what law do we get to examine an order dismissing a complaint with prejudice for a limited version. In other words, really, you're recasting this as a dismissal with and without prejudice, with prejudice on some claims, but without on others.
I think the response to that, Justice Pickering, is the complaint was always intended to be solely as a placeholder for the deficiency right. We understand how it was drafted, and that's why I believe that the subsequent proceeding, both the motion, which then on page 71 states again, based upon the foregoing, the bank, I'll skip the alphabet soup, seeks to dismiss, and this is in quotes, I'm quoting this part in particular, its deficiency complaint with prejudice. The estate did not oppose this, and so in seeking to dismiss the claim, the bank made clear that it saw the complaint as a placeholder for the deficiency.
And it should have amended the complaint if it wanted to dismiss with prejudice. There are a lot of things it could have done.
I think the fact that it didn't dismiss or amend, that it didn't dismiss without prejudice, or that it didn't amend the complaint, doesn't change the complaint into a complaint on the entirety of the contract.
Mr. Stern, it would be a rare circumstance, I remember, a defendant in a civil case who's received a motion to dismiss the complaint against them with prejudice would file an opposition. You're suggesting that the defendant in the case should file an opposition to clarify what your bank's position is?
No, Justice Hardesty, I think the bank's position was clear. It didn't require clarification. It said, this is a deficiency action, we move to dismiss it.
Well, the defendant would say, that may be your reason, but you want to dismiss with prejudice, have at it.
And Justice Hardesty, I think the court, in its dismissal order, recognized that it was a deficiency action, and that's what it dismissed.
Go ahead.
Mr. Stern, again, I understand your point. I realize you weren't the trial counsel, and I anticipate you probably handled it differently. But, yeah, the with prejudice part really bothers me, as Justice Pickering brought up, and Justice Hardesty, because if it's with prejudice, and if the claim, as Justice Pickering pointed out, is dismissed with prejudice, and the security goes away, and Ms. Doyle would be right, a quiet title action, the court could order the reconveyance of the deed of trust through a quiet title action. I don't know. I'm looking at this. If it said without prejudice, I don't know if it'd even be here, you know, like that. I mean, it would, all these issues might be moot, you know, at that stage. But I'm still struggling with this, how you can hang on to the security piece of it here. Assuming, as you acknowledge, the deficiency part has gone away, I guess you're asking us to kind of read between the lines of the order of the district court. It's real. Basically, what you're saying is, just as hard as pointed out, is it's some of it was with and some of it was without. That was the intent. Mm.
I think so, Justice Gibbons, and but I would take a slight issue with asking you to read between the lines. I think you can read that the actual express text of the order. On page 75 of the record, it says, therefore, plaintiff seeks... there's a typo here, but it says, therefore, plaintiff seeks to dismiss its deficient complaint with prejudice. I believe the context here makes clear that it meant deficiency complaint with prejudice. And so I think the order
that's
dismissed
here... It's a terrible typo.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying that you look to do a common sense reading of it, and it meant the order, it was deficiency versus just totally with prejudice as to all claims.
I believe so, Justice Gibbons, and I believe the rest of the order makes the context very clear.
Okay.
Simply responding
well,
to the unopposed.
I've read it, and I'll reread it again, and I understand. But, okay, thank you for answering my question.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, and I understand your arguments.
Thank you, Mr. Stern.
Thank you.
Ms. Doyle, you have 4 minutes and 8 seconds.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Justice Pickering, I think you called it an unfortunate typo. We've obviously enjoyed that typo quite a bit. We do think it was a deficient complaint. But that aside, the language of the order that really matters is now, therefore, it is hereby ordered that plaintiff's complaint is dismissed with prejudice. That's not some claims, that's the entire complaint. And there's no question, because of the exception to the one action rule, that the lender could have brought a claim for property at the same time as they brought their claim for the entire amount of the note. Indeed, I think that's what the probate code intends for people to do. You didn't hear anything from Mr. Stern in argument or in the briefing that explains why he couldn't have brought that note, that claim, or why claim preclusion would not apply in our petition to quiet title and forbid him from re-adjudicating the claims that were dismissed with prejudice. The court further, we heard talk about placeholder claims in probate, and you voiced concerns about the 60-day limit and whether lenders can properly adjudicate. Well, I think that lenders certainly can determine whether or not they're going to go after a deficiency in 60 days. They do it every day. They do check how much is owed on a note and what the potential assets are and decide whether or not they're seeking a deficiency. They do it in California all the time, where if you want non-judicial foreclosure, you have to waive a deficiency, period. So I don't believe that the probate code allows for a placeholder claim. And again, the court does not have to reach this broad question in this case because of the dismissal with prejudice. However, NRS 147-150, like the one action rule, provides a protection to borrowers that their estate is either going to be simplified and there's going to be no claims against the other assets of the estate if the lender chooses to foreclose solely on the security, or the lender has the opportunity to go through probate, seek a probate sale of the property, have the judge, again, determine the value, the proper sales price of what is likely the main asset in any estate.
Wouldn't you first have to have a foreclosure in order to determine what the deficiency was? And then looking at this complaint, to me, it clearly looks like they were looking for a deficiency judgment, and they chose to dismiss that and seek non-judicial foreclosure instead.
Well, Your Honor, again, I don't believe they could be seeking a deficiency claim, as you said, because a deficiency still doesn't exist, which is also what you said.
Right.
You have to have a foreclosure before you can have a deficiency.
Which is what they, I assume, they recognize in dismissing this complaint.
However, if you go through probate, and typically if you have a claim against assets in probate, the probate court will hold a probate court sale, which would be akin to a judicial foreclosure.
They also recognize that there probably weren't sufficient assets to satisfy any deficiency, and that would be another reason that would prompt them to seek non-judicial foreclosure.
And, Your Honor, I guess my question is why it took them 2 years to make that determination.
Well, Ms. Doyle, one would assume that if the bank was actually seeking a deficiency, it would have identified what the deficiency was. Nothing in the, as I understand it, nothing in the creditor's claim and nothing in the motion identifies any fair market value contest or comparison with the debt owed.
You're absolutely correct, Justice Hardesty. The complaint, the claim, none of them use the word deficiency. The first time you see the word deficiency is in the motion to voluntarily.
It doesn't even use fair market value either.
It does not use fair market value. It does not try and value the property. And it seeks the entire amount of the note. It doesn't limit it. Presumably, they could have said, the entire amount of the note is this. We expect to seek a deficiency after foreclosure. But they didn't do that. Again, Your Honors, I apologize. I see that I'm over.
You're out of time, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle and Mr. Stern, for your arguments in the briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted.